In a world where touch can be deadly and kingdoms are built on lies, Raven Kennedy's Gleam emerges as a breathtaking exploration of power, identity, and liberation. This third installment in the Plated Prisoner series has captivated millions of readers worldwide, climbing bestseller lists and inspiring countless fan theories across social media platforms. What began as a retelling of King Midas has evolved into something far more profound, a story about breaking free from golden cages, both literal and metaphorical. Celebrities like Taylor Swift have reportedly been spotted with copies, and the series has become a TikTok sensation with over 100 million views under its hashtags. The raw emotional journey of Arin, the gold-touched woman, resonates deeply with readers seeking stories of transformation and empowerment in fantasy settings. Arin's story begins in the darkest of places, trapped in a gilded cage in King Midas's palace, valued only for her ability to turn objects to gold with her touch. Her journey from captive to self-possessed woman forms the emotional backbone of Gleam. Having escaped Midas's cage in the previous book, only to be recaptured, Arin returns to Ranhold Castle with a transformed perspective. The palace that once seemed like salvation now reveals itself as another prison. What makes Arin's evolution so compelling is how Kennedy portrays the psychological complexity of abuse and captivity. Arin doesn't simply switch from loving Midas to hating him. Her feelings unravel slowly, painfully, as she recognizes the manipulation tactics that kept her compliant for years. "I let the innocent girl I once was have this moment as a quiet goodbye," she reflects, while Midas holds her, his false apologies ringing hollow after years of conditioning her to accept mistreatment as protection. The physical manifestation of Arin's power, her golden ribbons that extend from her back, serves as a brilliant metaphor for her growing agency. These ribbons, which she initially couldn't control, become extensions of her will as she learns to use them for protection, mobility, and eventually as weapons. When Midas brutally cuts them off in a pivotal scene, the violation goes beyond physical pain. It represents his attempt to sever her independence and return her to complete helplessness. This journey from passive acceptance to active resistance culminates in Arin's powerful declaration, "I will not go back into a divine damned cage." Her transformation isn't just about escaping physical confinement, but about recognizing her own worth and power beyond what others would use her for. Kennedy masterfully weaves a complex political landscape where power takes many forms: magical, political, sexual, and psychological. Every relationship in Gleam exists within this web of power dynamics, creating a rich tapestry of motivations and conflicts. King Midas, whose touch doesn't actually turn things to gold, he needs Arin for that, has built his entire empire on a lie. His power comes from perception and manipulation rather than inherent strength. "Without me turning things gold, his deceit would be exposed," Arin realizes. "He never wanted me to realize just how much power I actually have." This revelation fundamentally shifts the power dynamic between them, as Arin begins to understand that Midas needs her far more than she needs him. In contrast, King Ravenger, who often appears as Commander Rip, possesses genuine magical power, but chooses when and how to reveal it. His ability to shift between forms, from the scaled, spike-covered Rip to the more human-appearing King Ravenger, represents a fluidity of identity that Arin envies. "I envy his ability to escape his identity," she admits. "I'd jump at the chance to not be the Gold Girl, even for a night." The saddles, courtesans kept by nobility, represent another facet of power dynamics. Their value is determined entirely by their usefulness to the powerful, creating a hierarchy even among the subjugated. When Arin visits the saddle wing, she observes how they formed communities despite their rivalries, something she was denied by being kept isolated in her cage. This isolation was another of Midas's tactics, keeping her from forming alliances that might challenge his control. Even Queen Melina of Hybel, herself a victim of Midas's schemes, exercises what little power she has by painting over the gold in her castle with white paint, a symbolic rejection of Midas's influence that ultimately proves insufficient against his broader machinations. Throughout Gleam, Kennedy masterfully weaves a complex tapestry exploring various forms of captivity that extend far beyond Oren's literal cage. Some characters find themselves trapped by addiction, particularly the Saddles, who depend desperately on dew, a seemingly benevolent drug provided by Midas to help them cope, but actually designed as a sophisticated form of control. The drug creates both physical and psychological dependencies, leaving its users docile and compliant, a subtle yet devastating form of imprisonment that mirrors real-world systems of control through substance abuse. Political captivity emerges as another profound theme, exemplified most strikingly in Queen Melina's situation. Her marriage to Midas, initially appearing as a position of privilege, reveals itself as an elaborate cage. She finds herself caught in an intricate web of court politics, unable to protect even her own interests despite her royal title. The queen's predicament demonstrates how power structures can create invisible but unbreakable bonds. Even Midas, the apparent master of this golden kingdom, exists in his own form of captivity. His obsession with power and control has become a prison of his own making. His every decision, every relationship, and every interaction is filtered through the lens of acquisition and dominance. This self-imposed captivity drives him to increasingly desperate acts, showing how the desire to control others can ultimately result in losing control of oneself. Freedom, Kennedy suggests, manifests in the power of choice and self-determination. When Oren begins exploring the castle without physical restraints, she discovers that true freedom lies in the smallest decisions. The simple act of choosing her own meals or deciding which corridor to explore becomes profound exercises in autonomy. These seemingly minor choices represent crucial steps in reclaiming her identity and agency. For the first time since arriving in Oria, I'm making my own decisions. The novel delves deep into the paradoxical nature of freedom, particularly how it can become frightening after extended captivity. Oren's memory of staying on deck during a storm while crossing the Weywick Sea serves as a powerful metaphor. Feeling the raging air rather than hiding below, my first taste of dangerous freedom. This experience illustrates how true freedom necessarily includes the possibility of danger. The right to face risks and accept consequences of one's own choices, rather than merely enduring punishments imposed by others. Perhaps the most nuanced exploration comes through Kennedy's examination of internalized captivity. The author shows how victims of long-term control often become their own jailers, maintaining invisible barriers long after physical constraints disappear. Oren's journey involves confronting not just external obstacles, but also the deeply embedded voice of her captor. Midas's manipulative influence echoes in her thoughts, making her question her worth beyond her power and abilities. This psychological imprisonment proves far more challenging to escape than any physical confinement, requiring Oren to rebuild her sense of self-worth and autonomy from the ground up. In stark contrast to Oren's relationship with Midas, her developing connection with Slade/Rip offers a profound glimpse of what healthy desire might look like. Where Midas treated her as a possession to be displayed and controlled, Slade sees her as a person with agency and depth. Their interactions are marked by choice rather than coercion, respect rather than dominance. "You, Slade, I want you," she finally admits, a declaration that represents not just attraction, but the exercise of personal autonomy that had been denied to her for so long. Their physical relationship becomes a healing counterpoint to years of exploitation and abuse. When Slade tells her exactly what he wants, soul, mind, and body, it's not a demand, but an honest expression of desire that invites her equal participation. He consistently demonstrates this through actions, asking for consent, respecting her boundaries, and showing vulnerability of his own. Their intimate scenes are not just physically passionate, but emotionally transformative, showing Aaron that physical connection can be mutual rather than transactional, tender rather than controlling. Beyond romantic connection, Gleam deeply explores the importance of friendship and alliance in healing from trauma. Aaron's fierce determination to rescue Digby, her former guard who showed her small kindnesses during her captivity, demonstrates her growing capacity for loyalty and care beyond mere self-preservation. These acts of reciprocal kindness become stepping stones in her journey toward trust and connection. Her tentative bonds with Lou and the other Wraths show her gradually learning to work with others after years of enforced isolation, each small act of trust building toward larger collaborations. The complex relationship between Aaron and Rissa, another of Midas's saddles, particularly illustrates the potential for solidarity among the oppressed. Their initial interactions are colored by competition and mistrust, the natural result of Midas's manipulative tactics of pitting his saddles against each other. Yet as they begin to recognize their shared trauma and common enemy, they forge a tentative alliance. Their escape plan, though fraught with complications and setbacks, represents hope that those trapped in similar circumstances might help each other toward freedom. Through their cooperation, both women begin to understand that their strength lies not just in individual survival, but in collective resistance. These various relationships, romantic, friendly, and strategic, weave together to show how connection becomes both the means and the end of healing. Each relationship helps Aaron reclaim different aspects of her humanity that Midas tried to strip away. Her right to choose, her capacity for trust, her ability to care for others, and her power to act in her own interest. Magic in Kennedy's world comes with significant costs and complications that extend far beyond mere physical limitations. Oren's gold touch ability, which functions only during daylight hours, drains her physically when overused. Each transformation drawing from her life force like a battery slowly being depleted. The more she transforms objects or people into gold, the weaker she becomes, creating a literal representation of how giving too much of oneself can be depleting. This limitation forces her to make strategic choices about when and how to use her power, particularly in extended confrontations. Slade's power manifests in even more complex ways. His ability to corrupt and decay, to take life and restore it, marks him as King Rot in the eyes of many. The visible manifestations of his magic are impossible to fully conceal. Black roots crawl beneath his skin like dark rivers. Scales emerge in patches across his flesh, and bone-like spikes protrude at moments of intense emotion. These physical markers make him instantly recognizable and often feared, forcing him to develop elaborate disguises and alternate forms to move through society without inciting panic. His power over death itself makes him both essential to the kingdom and deeply mistrusted by its people. The novel suggests that great power brings not just ability, but responsibility and often devastating isolation. Both Oren and Slade are feared for what they can do, treated as weapons or threats rather than people. Their connection forms partly because they understand this burden in each other, the weight of possessing abilities others would exploit or destroy. They share quiet moments discussing the loneliness of being different, of having to constantly control and contain their powers to protect others. When Oren finally unleashes her full power against Midas, the gold consuming him completely, she discovers the terrifying potential within her and the cost of using it. The power surges through me, tempting me to destroy everything, to make the world fear me, she thinks, before realizing she cannot control or sustain such power without destroying herself as well. The gold spreads like a disease, threatening to consume not just her target, but everything in its path, including herself. This moment encapsulates Kennedy's nuanced approach to magic. It's not simply a cool superpower, but a force with consequences, limitations, and ethical implications that the wielder must grapple with. The author explores how power can corrupt not just through malicious intent, but through the simple act of using it. How the ability to change or end lives carries a psychological toll that shapes every decision and relationship. Through Oren and Slade's struggles, Kennedy illustrates that true strength lies not in the magnitude of one's power, but in the wisdom to know when and how to use it or choose not to. Truths are like spices, Oren reflects early in the novel. Add some and you get more layers to digest, but too many can make life unpalatable. This metaphor sets the stage for a story where truth is both weapon and salvation, where deceptions large and small shape every relationship. Midas's entire kingdom is built on a fundamental lie, that he possesses the golden touch, when in reality it's Oren's power he exploits. When he finally reveals himself as Barden East, the crime lord Oren had fled years before, the deception becomes even more profound. I ran straight into the arms of the man I was trying to escape, she realizes in horror, her entire narrative of rescue and protection collapsing. Slade, too, lives behind masks, though his deceptions serve different purposes. His dual identity as Commander Rip allows him movement and freedom his royal persona would not. When he transforms between forms before Oren's eyes, it represents both vulnerability and trust, showing her his true self despite the risks. Oren's journey towards self-discovery involves peeling away layers of deception, both others' lies about her and the falsehoods she's told herself. Her growing understanding of her own power, both magical and personal, forms the emotional core of the novel. A darkness has sprouted inside me, nurtured from cruel soil, she acknowledges, recognizing that her capacity for violence and vengeance is part of who she's become through suffering. The novel doesn't suggest that truth is always better than deception. Sometimes lies protect, sometimes truths destroy. But it does argue that self-knowledge, however painful, is essential to freedom. Oren cannot truly liberate herself until she confronts the reality of her situation and her own complicity in it. Everyone has their edge, Slade tells Oren, the point where they can be pushed no further. This concept becomes central to Oren's development, discovering where her boundaries lie and what happens when they're crossed. For years, Oren endured Midas's manipulation and control, believing she had no choice. Her edge begins to reveal itself when she refuses to return to her cage, declaring, "No locks, Midas, or this room is no better than a cage." Each small act of defiance, exploring the castle, questioning his decisions, planning her escape, pushes her closer to discovering her true limits. When Midas cuts off her ribbons, he finally pushes her beyond that edge. The physical and emotional violation is so complete that something fundamental breaks in Oren, allowing her full power to emerge. In the climactic confrontation, she doesn't just escape Midas, she destroys him, turning his golden obsession against him by encasing him completely in the metal he coveted. Kennedy doesn't present this moment as simple triumph, however. Oren unleashed power threatens to consume her along with everyone else. I want everyone to hurt like I hurt, she admits, revealing how vengeance can become its own form of captivity. Her final question, did I fall or did I fly, captures the ambiguity of her liberation. Has she truly freed herself or simply exchanged one form of bondage for another? This nuanced portrayal of empowerment avoids the simplistic, strong female character trope, instead showing the messy, complicated reality of finding one's power after prolonged abuse. Strength emerges not just in dramatic moments of confrontation, but in the daily choices to resist, to question, to seek connection, and ultimately to reclaim one's own narrative. Throughout Gleam, Kennedy masterfully portrays the lasting impact of trauma with nuanced understanding and psychological depth. Oren's experiences, being trafficked as a child, exploited for her power, physically and emotionally abused, have shaped her identity and responses in profound ways that cannot simply be erased by escape or revenge. The novel delves deep into the complex ways trauma reshapes one's perception of reality, relationships, and self-worth. Her initial inability to recognize Midas's manipulation stems from early trauma that distorted her understanding of care and protection. "He's not used to me standing up instead of kneeling," she realizes, acknowledging how she learned to survive through compliance. This insight reveals how early abuse can normalize toxic relationships, making it difficult for survivors to recognize genuine care. Her ribbons, which react protectively even when she consciously chooses passivity, represent her body's memory of trauma, the instinctive defenses that develop when conscious resistance seems impossible. These magical manifestations serve as a powerful metaphor for how trauma responses become embedded in both body and psyche. The novel doesn't offer easy healing narratives, but instead shows recovery as ongoing, non-linear work. Oren's journey illustrates how healing often involves two steps forward and one step back. Her growing trust in Slade and the Wraths represents small steps toward connection after isolation, though these relationships are frequently tested by her instinct to withdraw. Her determination to save Digby shows her capacity for care despite her own suffering, a testament to resilience and the human capacity to extend compassion even when wounded. Even her rage against Midas, though destructive, represents a necessary reclamation of emotions she had suppressed for survival, highlighting how anger can be both healing and harmful in recovery. Kennedy weaves subtle details throughout that illuminate the complexity of trauma recovery. Oren's physical reactions to touch, her hypervigilance in new environments, and her difficulty accepting help all ring true to trauma survivors' experiences. The author shows how trauma affects not just conscious thoughts, but also unconscious reactions, sleep patterns, and the ability to form connections. In the epilogue, when Slade carries Oren's unconscious body from the collapsing castle while Digby demands fix her, the novel acknowledges that healing is not instantaneous. The damage done to Oren, physically, emotionally, magically, requires time and care to address, not a simple happily ever after. This scene powerfully illustrates how even those who love trauma survivors must learn to be patient with the healing process. This realistic portrayal of trauma's impact makes Oren's journey all the more powerful. Her strength lies not in being unaffected by her experiences, but in continuing to fight for herself despite them, in refusing to let her past dictate her future entirely, even as she acknowledges how it has shaped her. Through Oren's story, Kennedy demonstrates that healing isn't about erasing trauma, but about learning to live fully despite it, and sometimes because of what it has taught us about survival and resilience. Gleam concludes with a delicate balance of resolution and uncertainty. Midas lies defeated, but Oren's fate hangs by a thread. This carefully crafted ending provides the satisfaction of a hard-won victory while planting seeds for the continuing saga, acknowledging that healing from trauma is rarely a linear journey. The epilogue's shift to Slade's perspective proves particularly poignant, revealing the raw desperation in his attempt to preserve Oren's life through magical stasis. As her golden power threatens to consume her from within, we witness the price of victory through the eyes of someone who has watched her transformation from the beginning. This perspective shift accomplishes multiple narrative goals. It validates the depth of Oren and Slade's connection, demonstrates the dangerous magnitude of her powers, and reinforces that surviving abuse is only the first step in a longer journey of recovery. The Golden Goldvine poem weaves throughout the final chapter like a haunting refrain, its verses serving as both prophecy and warning. The poem's imagery of golden vines that strangle their master speaks to the destructive nature of unchecked power and draws parallel to historical figures who were destroyed by their own ambition. This metaphor gains particular resonance when considering Oren's situation. She now possesses the very power that once imprisoned her, raising questions about whether anyone can truly control such devastating abilities without being corrupted by them. Kennedy masterfully employs dual meanings in the novel's closing moments. When Oren asks, "Did I fall or did I fly?" the question resonates on multiple levels. It speaks to her literal state, suspended between life and death in magical stasis. It questions the nature of her transformation, whether breaking free from Midas truly liberated her or simply changed the nature of her bonds. And it challenges readers to consider the fine line between surrender and transcendence, between losing oneself and becoming something new. The conclusion leaves several threads intentionally unresolved. The true extent of Oren's powers, the potential consequences of magical stasis on her body and mind, and the broader implications of Midas's defeat for the kingdom's power structure. These open questions create a rich foundation for future storytelling, while remaining true to the novel's central themes of autonomy, transformation, and the complex nature of freedom. Through it all, Kennedy maintains an unwavering focus on agency. Oren's future, whatever it holds, will be shaped by her own choices rather than the desires of others. The gold that once marked her as property has become a source of power, but learning to wield that power without becoming its servant presents its own challenges. This transformation from possession to possessor sets up compelling questions about identity, control, and the true nature of liberation.